Hey there, gang. Patrick King here, and I want to thank you for tuning in for episode number 16 of Talking About Horses. In these broadcasts, I try to bring you some of the best riders, horsemen, trainers, equine advocates, and thought leaders in the horse industry for tips, insights, and stories. You can listen at home, at work, in the car, or in the saddle, either through Facebook, YouTube, or by downloading the podcast from the iTunes store. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by my good friend, Richard Winters. For almost four decades, Richard Winters has been pursuing and perfecting the art of horsemanship. For all these years, Richard and his wife Cheryl's motto has been, enjoy the journey. From teaching his first clinic at a junior college in the early 1980s, the Winterses have literally traveled around the world sharing his unique brand of horsemanship. Understanding horses, and perhaps more importantly, understanding people, has been the key to Richard helping literally thousands of people achieve their own personal horsemanship goals. Richard, thank you so much for joining me on this broadcast. I really appreciate it.
Patrick, it's my pleasure, and it's amazing how important one can sound when they write their own press release.
It sounded really good. I'm impressed.
Oh, my goodness. So good to get caught up with you. We've got some history going.
That's right. We do. We do. Yeah, we were talking a little bit before we clicked the go live button here. It's I think we've known each other for, gosh, over a decade now, I believe.
And, oh, I think so. You bet. Yeah. You're the only guy that I have a camel story with, so that makes it pretty unique.
There we go, right? I think about that all the time, and I laugh. Anytime I see somebody, even with their horses, jump back off the halter rope, I kind of chuckle at that.
Oh, my goodness, that was crazy. Yeah, you being the wild animal trainer, Patrick said, well, hey, you want to ride a camel? I said, yeah, I want to ride a camel. And my goodness, I got out there and I felt pretty inept. I thought that camel was going to eat me.
That's it. She was just excited to go to work.
I guess. That was funny.
That was funny. That was funny. And I'll never forget the look on Cheryl's face. I think she was more worried than anybody in that situation.
Oh, man, those crazy camels, they got heads and necks like a rattlesnake. You think they're just going to come around and bite your head off.
That's it, right? Right? That's it. Oh, gosh, that was a whole lot of fun. So tell you what, Richard, for anybody that might be tuning in and listening here, can you give us a little bit more background on yourself and tell us a little bit more about kind of your past with horses and horsemanship?
Well, you bet, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that never even heard of Richard Winters. I told somebody, you know, I'm not the biggest fish in the pond, but I'm in the pond. That's what I've been doing. All my life, I never wanted to be a policeman or an astronaut or a fireman. All I ever thought about was being a cowboy and a horseman, if I even knew what that was. But I had a problem, Patrick. I was raised in town. My dad was a preacher. My mom was a nurse. We lived in a tract home in Fresno, California, and so my desire was strong, but my opportunities were few. But as a young boy, I think maybe 12, somewhere around there, I found a stable about 7 miles from my house, and I began to pedal my bicycle out to that stable every day after school and on the weekends, and I was just the proverbial stable brat, hanging out there, getting in trouble, you know, didn't have a place there, and just looking for opportunities. And at that time in the 70s, as a lot of stables did, they had a dude string, about 25 old crippled horses that for $2.50, you could rent one for an hour. But I'd get there before daylight on Saturday morning. I'd help the old man saddle up all those horses, and they fed all the horses, and they cleaned the stalls with a horse-drawn wagon. I'd help them harness up the horse, and that's how it started for me, just finding those opportunities. And then in junior high through high school, I went up and wrangled dude horses in the mountains below Yosemite, California. Did that, and then high school, I went to a horseshoeing school, became a certified farrier, and went to work as an apprentice to a horse trainer that I always said that was kind of my first introduction to higher levels of horsemanship, you know, not just horseback riding, not just kick to go and jerk to stop. So that was a great opportunity for me, and then rodeoed for a little bit in college and shod a lot of horses. When I first got married, my first business card said horseshoer, didn't even say trainer. Little by little, started training a few horses, and then my business was 50-50 for a lot of years. And then we kind of got on that bandwagon before I got plumb out of town doing clinics. Did my first one almost 30 years ago. And at that time, I could name the four or five guys or gals out there that were doing clinics, and And now, as you know, I mean, they're on every street corner. You can't keep track of them.
Absolutely. Right, right.
And
everybody and his brother.
Really good.
Yeah.
And they're talented. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to have to start this all over again today, but it was a great time to get into the business and helping people with the horses and helping horses with their people. And so we just never looked back. And as you mentioned, it's just afforded us a lot of great opportunities. We've been all over the country and around the world sharing our little brand and style of horsemanship. And these are things we never would have gone and done or pursued had it not been for the horse and the people that were looking for help.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So now I remember a couple years ago seeing some photos and even some video clips, I believe, of you teaching in Scotland. Was that right?
Yeah, a couple years, maybe 2 or 3 years we've gone over to Scotland. That's got to be one of our favorite countries. Put it on your bucket list, man.
Really? I'm
so
going to do that.
Cool over there. And now when I told the Scottish people that, hey, I could move here, they said, well, come back in February and double check. when you got like 4 hours of daylight a day.
I'll bet.
It's cold and frozen. But it's a beautiful country. And they're avid horse people over there. They all love horses. And, you know, it's dominated by English riding, but there is a contingency of Western riders all throughout Europe now.
Right.
It's gaining more popularity. But as you know, and your business is the same, Patrick, if you've got a horse and you're trying to convey an idea, you're a potential client for me. It doesn't matter if you ride English or Western or competitive or just for fun. But yeah, it's amazing over there. You know, we're here in California and in the United States, and you go and pick up an antique, so this is 100 years old. Well, you go over to Europe and you pick up an antique, and it can be 1,500 years old.
Yeah, so that's incredible.
Everything is old. And it's like, wow, somebody built this barn 700 years ago? Are you kidding me? Uh-huh. So that was just amazing to see those things and see those old castles. And, yeah, the Scottish Highlands up in their mountainous area and the Highland cattle. And, it was just great. I would recommend.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think this is the first time we've had a chance to talk about your trip to Scotland, and now you've convinced me that I need to go at some point.
you betcha. Yeah, we're looking forward to going again at some point. Pretty neat.
That's great. That's great. So, and you're sorry, excuse me. So you've done about 30 years of clinics, and I'd love to get back to a little bit about the apprenticeship and that sort of thing that you were doing as you were kind of getting started with horses. But you're now at the Thatcher School in Ojai, California. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And some of your listeners will know of this big shift that we made, and some will not. But we were just minding our own business this winter and got a phone call out of the blue from the headmaster of the Thatcher School. And he said, what would it take for you to come here and run our horse program? Now, some of your listeners might remember that we were here at the Thatcher School for 10 years,
up until
5 years ago, but I was their artist in residence. I was just a glorified house guest. I maintained my own autonomy and ran my business out of here, but I was an observer of their program. It really is unique. We're talking about a boarding school for high school students. They come literally from all over the world, and it's not for the recalcitrant or the incorrigible or the rebellious kids or jet-setter parents. These are the best and brightest kids in the world with really engaged families that want to give them the greatest opportunity possible. And they come to this school as a college prep school, but for over 100 years, Patrick, their horsemanship program has been a centerpiece of the school, not to make horsemen and horsewomen of these kids for a lifetime, but they believe, as I know you and I believe, that there's something about a horse that can teach us life lessons that nothing else can. And so the freshmen come to the school, 90% of them, with, you know, almost zero horse experience, but they are given on day one a horse and tack and a stall, and 7 days a week they have to have their stall clean and their horse fed before 8 o'clock, and 5 days a week for 2 hours they will ride. That will be their mandatory outdoor activity for the year. They'll go on and play sports in their upperclassmen years, but this freshman class are all going to have this common experience. And you know, a young person might come in and he's a good soccer player, and this girl comes in and she's a good violinist, and somebody comes in and they're a scholar. But when they come out to the barn, they're all the same. And horses don't care if you're a boy or a girl, if you're rich or you're poor, what your ethnicity is. We're all on the same playing field. As you know, you got to work smarter instead of harder. You got to keep your emotions in check. And you got to learn the responsibility of taking care of these horses. So it's, It's a big deal. When you called a few minutes ago, I was just coming back from the field where 100 of us were riding together. By the time we have 65 freshmen and about 25 upperclassmen that have chose to ride in a given term, and then the faculty instructors, we're at 100. Wow. So it's a huge program, and I'm just doing my best to be the conductor of a great symphony, waving my hands up and down, hoping that everybody keeps playing the music.
Right, right. So you weren't joking. You said you've got a 4-acre arena that 100 of you ride in at once. You weren't kidding at all about that.
Nope, we call it the Gymkhana Field, it's a huge, great field with really good ground, and it will support 100 riders at a time.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. You better come and see it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait. I can't wait. That's very cool. That's a place I remember. You had brochures or pamphlets or something, I believe, the first time we met. I remember looking at those, thinking that'd be a really neat place to visit.
That's right. And I would encourage your listeners, everybody's good on the web anymore. They should just Google the Thatcher School. It's THACHER, the Thatcher School. They got a lot of fun videos of the horsemanship program. And you know, there's a lot of boarding schools around the country that have a horseback riding program maybe attached to it. And, I'm going to ride horses. Oh, I'm going to do archery or, you know, whatever. But this is so much more than that. It's a total immersion, all-inclusive. But they've been doing it for 125 years, and I'm just doing my best to continue the legacy.
That's fantastic. So you're running the whole operation there now as far as the horse side things goes.
I'm the director of the horse program. Yeah, and I've got a great faculty here. I've got an assistant head and some full-time people and some faculty members that come out and coach horsemanship. I could not do it without them. I told them the other day, I said, you know, if I disappear tomorrow, you guys will keep this thing going. But if you disappear tomorrow, I'm in big trouble.
The ship is going down, right?
it's a pretty amazing deal.
Wow. Wow. So now if I remember correctly, when you were the artist in residence, you were also teaching some weekend horsemanship clinics from there. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. We did a few things right here out of this facility. We would do them in the summertime when the school would disband, and it worked out really slick. I could do summer events where people could come here and stay in the dormitories and eat in our dining hall, and I could even lease back bachelor horses. So that was really cool back in those days. Since that time, once we left, we formed a new partnership with the V6 Ranch. It's a working cattle ranch in Central California. We do our summer events there now.
Okay. So you still are doing some teaching, even though you're running the horse operation there?
Well, very little. I am not too available. When we decided to pull the trigger on this and said, yes, we're going to make this commitment. I couldn't have it both ways because this is a full-time job. And so I had a whole slate of clinics scheduled for 2017. I suspended all those clinics. And I'm not saying that I won't do any outside events, but I'm doing very few. Now, the V6 Ranch events in the summer, we're going to do an all-women's horsemanship retreat that we've done for 20 years and what we call Ride the Rancho, which is a week-long event. And since school is out, I'm free to do that, and it'd just be a great place where I can reconnect, Cheryl and I can, with all of our clients and customers that we've known over the years. So that's just a couple fun events that we will do. You might see me at an expo here or there, or maybe at a horse show showing cow horses, but most of the time you'll see me right here at the Thatcher School.
That's fantastic. I know you've probably got a lot of repeat students that come out for those summer retreats, right?
Well, oftentimes, and that's good and bad. I appreciate the fact that they think there's value in coming back, and always get nervous. What jokes am I going to tell this time? they heard all my jokes, so we do have a lot of people that really enjoy those events and come year after year. I think when Cheryl put the word out this last year, she told her past participants first and filled up before she could even get the word out to the general public.
Wow.
But we'll try to keep doing those. It's just a great way to stay connected to the horse industry at large. And the people at the V6 Ranch are great. You know, it's a 22,000-acre working cattle ranch that is set up for guests with a lodge and a bunkhouse and a full-service restaurant. And just works well for us now.
That's great. That is great. So you mentioned that you might be at some horse shows. Are you still riding, training, doing the rain cow horse deal?
Well, we still want to keep our hand in that. That's always been important to me. And when I was talking with the Thatcher School, that was an important point that I wanted to bring out, that I did not want to give that up. Because for me, Patrick, and you've got to feel the same way. You know, when we go do a horsemanship clinic, people pat us on the back and they tell us what a great job we've done. And in all reality, Pat, you and I at that clinic were probably the best horsemen there. There was probably nobody better there than us, you know, because we were the ones teaching the clinic.
Right, right.
But when, and so you can get to thinking, wow, I am a horse training son of a gun. They can make about me. I should be a horse whisperer. You'll get to thinking that. But when I go show rein cow horses, they don't care how many clinics I've done. They don't care that I've been to Scotland. They don't care that I got a TV show. You know, you go out there and you show your horse and you get it done or you don't get it done. And,
right.
Of course, ever since I was a kid, that whole California style of horsemanship from the vaquero traditions of the bridle horses and the hackamore horses, I've always loved that. And so yes, I'm going to keep showing a few of those horses, training a few of those horses. I call it my professional development. You know, that's the thing that keeps me honest, that when I have to go show against my heroes in that field, you know, if I enjoy a little success here and there, great. If I have to eat a little humble pie, you know, I'll still learn something. So it's good, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Good, good. And you're absolutely right. You know, when you get to those shows, you're just a rider with a number. You're a name on the entry card, you know.
Yeah.
And it does, it helps to keep it, like you said, you know, eat a little bit of that humble pie and check in with where we are compared to kind of the new industry standard, too.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, in all reality, Patrick, what it's done for us over the last, I'd say 15 years, I think it was a great pillar of my business, because a lot of people, you know, the clinic thing's been going on so long, and there's clinic groupies out there that come to Patrick King clinics again and again and again. They're just hooked on it. But a lot of them now are saying, what's next? I can get my horse in the trailer, and I can pick up the correct lead, and he doesn't walk over the top of me anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, what's next? And so as I have been trying to bump up my horsemanship and get more refined and more precision and all that business and enter into the horse show world, it's given me things that I can share then with clients. And it's also helped bridge the gap that I think some people thought that somehow, and we'll just use this term for lack of another, natural horsemanship and competitive horsemanship and performance horsemanship were mutually exclusive things. Mm-hmm. And so I, for the last 15 years, have been trying to bridge that gap and say, no, it's just the difference between playing sandlot baseball and Major League Baseball. The principles are still the same, but we're just going to take it to another level. And, you know, what is so funny, when I go and get help, and Lord knows I need it, so I go hunt out my mentors, and I take lessons, and I hang with them, and they'll begin to tell me things and work on something, and I have to laugh, and I say, that's the exact same thing that I've been telling these middle-aged ladies that have been coming to my clinics. But it's just at another level. The principles are the same. But now we're talking about, you know, minor league ball or major league ball compared to just, you know, Pop Warner football or whatever.
Right, right.
So that's just been huge for us. And then, too, I think getting on these cow horses after working here at school so much, in a way, it's kind of like that's my golf. I guess that's an outlet for me. It's something different to do.
Yeah.
And I think you're the same. If I thought, Patrick, that I was going to be the same horseman with the same skill set 5 years from now that I am today, I'd slit my throat. I would be so depressed.
It would be disappointing. No,
I've got to get better.
Right.
And I know there's so much more to attain to. I could rattle off a litany of names right now of men and women that are better than me. And it's like, that's what I'm shooting for.
Right.
I want to get better. And that's why, as you mentioned earlier, my wife and I, our motto has been enjoy the journey. Because I guess I'm never going to get to the destination. It's just out there so far. So I need to enjoy every little success, everything that each horse teaches me, every relationship that we build with people around horses, and just enjoy those moments along the way.
Yes, for sure. Well, and you know, I'm reminded as we talk about this, I'm reminded of a piece of advice that you gave me, I think a decade ago maybe now. We were chatting, I believe it was at one of your clinics you were teaching, or maybe we just met up somewhere, on the road. I don't remember completely right now, but, I was talking about riding some of my horses versus riding the client's horses. And I share this advice actually with a lot of folks. Every professional trainer that I work with or professional coach that I work with at a clinic, I share this advice to them. I said to you, well, you know how it is when you've got horses in training, your horses are always the last ones to get rode. And I remember you looked at me with the most serious look and I thought, uh-oh, I've upset him or something. And you said, and you said, no, I used to know what that's like, but I don't know that anymore. You said, you'll always ride the horses you were paid to ride because that's the character you have. But at the end of the day, you'll put yours off till the end of the day. And at the end of the day, you're tired or you're hungry or you're cranky and you want to go home and your horse never got ridden. So if you ride your horse first thing in the morning, you're still going to ride all those horses, even if you're tired and hungry at the end of the day, because you were paid to ride them.
Yeah, yeah, you betcha. And, you know, Patrick, I think, too, that if we're not careful in this business, that can become an excuse mm-hmm. of us not getting our horses broke and
Absolutely.
Measuring up, you know, to industry standards of horsemanship. You know, get out there, get them rode, get better, because the clients' horses that we've ridden, and, you know, I don't know how many thousands that you and I have ridden now over our lifetime, mm-hmm. Once we get them good, then we don't get to ride them anymore.
Exactly. They go home. Know? Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I told somebody for years, I said, well, I don't even know why I like horses because I never get to ride a good one. Why would they bring me a good one?
Right. Right.
You betcha. And so it wasn't, you know, until the last, I don't know, 15 years or whatever that I started getting better horses in training and started developing my own, but not fall back on that excuse, oh, I'm just too busy working these problem horses. And that's mm-hmm. great. And that's a niche and a skill set that we need to know.
Right.
But when I lay my head down at night and know that there's so much more out there, it's like I at least got to make an effort
yes.
to get out there and get it figured out.
Yes, absolutely. And just as much for our own advancement of our horsemanship, because otherwise you're riding basically the same horse over and over, right? Because you're getting the problem horses or the green horses, the young horses to start under saddle.
Right.
And it becomes kind of like that Bill Murray movie, what was that, Groundhog Day, where it's
yeah,
the same
sure.
thing over and over, you know, and it doesn't really change. And I know it can be that way with us. We can get stagnant and then wonder why our horses didn't just, you know, magically improve by divine intervention between the months and or weeks and months that we got to ride them, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I think we begin to build a base of knowledge around certain things, whether it's horses or colt starting, and we get very comfortable and confident with that. But the refinement of horsemanship and finishing a horse, getting a horse in the bridle, whatever your goal is, then your frame of reference is so much smaller. You know,
yes.
you started 200 colts, but you've put two horses in the bridle, you know.
Right.
And so you just got to get out into that water that you're not as comfortable being in, and then you'll start getting comfortable in that water, but it's a big ocean. And so every
yes.
time you get a little deeper, it's, oh, man, there's still a long ways to go.
Right. That's so true. That is so true. And so I'm sure you do the same. I know I'm always trying to kind of be out there testing the waters, right? Getting out there into that
yep.
bigger ocean and seeing if we can't kind of live a little bit uncomfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly yeah. where the growth happens.
And that's why I think it's so important that people in my business and your business, that we've got to ride with people that are better than us. Because like I mentioned at the onset, you can get to believe in your own press release. And if I just do clinic after clinic and I'm always the best one there, you know, it's going to be pretty tough to advance. But if I get around people that are better than me, even though it's not always comfortable and I feel awkward, it challenges me to step up to the plate. Do you know a gentleman by the name of Doug Williamson? He's a ring cow horse trainer out here in California, very talented horseman in his 70s now, and been a mentor of mine in the cow horse deal, a million-dollar rider in the NRCHA. But he told me a story one time, and I'll just share it with you. When he was a young man, he wanted to rope calves. And so he was rodeoing full-time, going to a bunch of amateur rodeos and doing pretty well, you know, keeping enough gas in his pickup and food on the table. Well, some friends of his had pro cards. They were in the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association. They didn't call it that at that time, but they were rodeoing professionally. And they said, Doug, come with us, man. You should come throw in your rope calves. Good. Come rope with us. He says, no, I don't know. I got my very best day to beat any of you guys. I don't want to go do that. Well, they kept after him, and he decided, okay, I'm going to throw in with them. And so he started going down the road with those guys, and you know what happened? He got better.
He got better, yeah.
Because he was no longer the best of the worst.
Right.
He was the worst of the best. Okay, and it had to be a little uncomfortable, but he said, my whole game just come up because I was surrounded by guys that did it better than me, and they were helping me and coaching me. And so I always remember that story. And if I have to be the worst of the best, you know, there's worse lots in life than that.
There sure is, right? Yes, there sure is. Yeah, somebody's got to be at the bottom of the pack, but you know, if you can pick the pack you're in, that's not so bad.
Yeah, not a bad pond to be in.
Right, right. Oh, gosh. Okay, so let's see, looking over some of the notes here that I jotted down a little bit before we started chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit, you had mentioned your apprenticeship that you did with a horseman when you were younger, when you were kind of getting started with this. I believe that was that before farrier school?
Right about that same time. I was in high school at time. And, you know, I'd hung out at that stable, and I'd worked up in the mountains wrangling dude horses. And I thought, hey, I got this thing figured out. I'm a horseman. I'm a cowboy. I'm a horse training son of a gun. And I was living in Clovis, California with my family, and there was a gentleman there. His name was Troy Henry, and he was truly a horseman. He was really big in the 60s and 70s. He would take, you know, 30 kids to Santa Rosa and all the different horse shows and trained a lot of stock horses. And so I knew that he knew what was going on, and so I knocked on his door one day, and I said, Mr. Henry, I hear you might need a colt starter, and I think I'm your man. And I think he just shut the door and walked away. I give it the time of day. But, you know, I just came back the next day, maybe with a little more humble attitude. But I just stayed in there, and he said, I'm not going to hire any more boys. Boys are just trouble. I don't want to do that. But I stayed in it, and sure enough, he gave me a job, but not really as his colt starter. I remember cleaning a lot of stalls. I remember, you know, fetching horses for him, getting up before daylight and having seven horses saddled. So when he got out of bed, they'd be ready to go. But that was my first introduction to higher levels of horsemanship. And we talk about horseback riding, which is just the art of not falling off, you know, pretty big club. But
right.
Horsemanship is more of an elite club. And he introduced that to me, the psychology of that past just, you know, kick to go and jerk to stop. You know, I wish I'd been a little bit older, and I wish I'd stayed a little bit longer to absorb even more. But just to kind of put it all in context, I had been there for about a year, and another young man, although he was 10 years my senior, he was starving to death in that country trying to train horses. And since Troy Henry, the gentleman I was working for, was kind of semi-retired but had a huge stable, he said that he would lease 10 stalls to this aspiring horse trainer. And that horse trainer stayed there, and we had a lot of interaction during that time. And that young man's name was Pat Pirelli, which perhaps a few of your listeners have heard of. And so Pat will say, and of course he's the king of hyperbole and always got great stories, but he'll say, you know, I've met thousands of horse people, but I've only met five horsemen in my whole life. This is just his spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll talk about those five horsemen, and one of them was Troy Henry. He wasn't a famous horse show guy, and the fact that he showed horses a lot himself, but he was a great teacher and built a huge business where he would train the horses, sell the horses to the families, keep the horses in training, give the kids lessons, haul them to horse shows. Yeah, he had a tack store right there in his barn. It was a full service deal.
A whole operation.
But anyway, that was huge for me, just to get that start with the California style of horsemanship. And then I just spent the next 30 plus years trying to build on that.
Wow. That's a great start to be exposed to all of that, you know, so early on in there. I know we see a lot of riders that have very little experience starting out, and then they start to get a little confident with their abilities at whatever level their abilities are. and we see them kind of hang out shingles maybe to go on and be a professional, and then the experience card kind of comes up and slaps them in the face a little bit. And it seems there's not as many people working with the apprenticeship idea anymore as what there used to be. Do you find that, or maybe is that just a regional thing?
Well, you know, when I look at all the horse trainers, horsemen and horsewomen out there, I think, and all those that are enjoying any success, the vast majority of them follow this track of the traditional apprentice, where you go and work very, very hard for very, very little and pay your dues for a long, long time to get started. Now, in the last 20 years, there's been colleges and universities that have put together horse training programs, and kids that really didn't have any opportunities, they'd sign up for these programs. And if they can get placed, and some of them are enjoying some success in that, then great. I'm not down on it at all. Sure. But ultimately, even to today, those that are really making it are paying their dues in the apprenticeship program. My daughter, Sarah, who's truly a greater horseman, in a generic term, than I am. I would go take lessons from her all day long. She married a gentleman back in Chris Dawson, mm-hmm. which is a world-class cow horse trainer, and so they're the big power couple down in Texas. And they have, I think, six different employees working for them, and most of those young people are hoping to be Chris and Sarah Dawson one day. But they recognize that now I've got to get up early in the morning, saddle these horses, warm these horses up, cool these horses down for Chris and Sarah Dawson. And so they're following that route, because if you want to get to that level, it's hard to do it any other way than that.
Yeah.
And you know, one other thing, Patrick, that I got to thinking about my time with Troy and my apprenticeship there, I think what that did for me, it allowed me at a very young age to get on some horses and to feel some things that I could not have felt otherwise. What it feels like for a horse to lope down there and put his butt in the ground and really stop, or to pick up on the bridle reins and have them be soft, or go back and forth with a cow, or change leads. Now, I couldn't duplicate it. I couldn't train a horse to do it, but I had a chance to feel it,
right. What
it could be like. And once you feel that, it's like, I don't know how long it's going to take for me to be able to do that, but I'm not satisfied with anything else. You know, once you drive a car with power steering and power brakes, you're probably not going to go back
right.
to something that does not have that. It's like, no, if I know that's out there, I'm going to get it. And so that's what that did for me, that it's not just horseback rides, not just dude horses up in the mountain, but we can have a relationship with horses. They will do amazing things for us, provided things are explained to them the way that they can understand. And so, again, that's what I've been working on.
Yeah, and I think that's so true, you know, getting the opportunity to feel those things that you're wanting to eventually train. I know that, or develop in a horse. I know that's something that Ray Hunt used to say to us all the time. You know, you're doing something you never did to get something you never had, right? So it can be very much a struggle that way. And I see that oftentimes with many riders, whether they are seeking to be professional riders or whether they're just seeking to be confident riders. If they've never felt what it is we're talking about trying to achieve, they have no idea where they are in the process.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. So let's see where we are on here. You beat me to the punch there with the, we were going to talk about horsemanship in the family. That's great to see that Sarah has gone on and found so much success already. That's fantastic. Now, you and Sarah have both been competitors at the Road to the Horse also. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. And that's been a lot of fun. Years ago, I think it was 2009, I was invited to that event and had the privilege and good fortune at that time to win the event. And, you know, hats off to Tootie Bland, the owner and producer of that event. She built a huge industry there in a brand new event that no one had been aware of. And if a young trainer is trying to build their particular brand, you know, you can never afford that kind of advertising and publicity that you get at Road to the Horse. But it was a place where I could showcase, you know, my style of horsemanship, and cold starting worked out well. That year and subsequent years, I came back as the commentator. It's kind of like You know, when you're a football player and you can't throw the football anymore, what do? They give you a microphone. Okay, now you can just talk about it, buddy.
There you go.
But it was great to then have Sarah be asked to come and participate because, you know, she grew up a horse crazy girl. She's worked for me for years and then went off and worked with other trainers and just acquired a huge, strong skill set. And so she went and competed at Road to the Horse as well. And I'm pretty stoic kind of guy, but when she rode out there and did some of the things she did, I might have had to wipe a tear out of my eye. And it's also, it's kind of like, you know, those old samurai movies where the young samurai is duking it out with his master and then he knocks the sword out of the master's hand and then the master say, oh, you master now. And that's kind of what happened with me and Sarah. She knocked the sword out of my hand and she's just so talented and her husband's so talented. They rank these riders in the National Ranked Cowhorse Association in world standings as who the top riders are. So as of right now, he's the number two rider in the world, and she's the number seven rider in the whole world.
That's tremendous.
Big deal for those kids. Right. They are players.
Right. Well, that's something to certainly make you proud for sure.
Oh, yeah. When our kids are doing well, Patrick, then everything's all right.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's fantastic. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about your TV show. I know you had that in the past. Is that something that's still going on?
No, we're not doing that right now. But boy, we worked at that for years. We were on RFD TV. We were on the Racehorse Channel and just kept it out there, you know, and that was a very popular thing for a lot of years. And I think, and you know, we know people that are still on those channels. But it's funny society that we live in, and with technology, people are finding information. Well, look at you. Look what you're doing right now.
Right.
You know, there are ways to glean information on your time when you want to look at it on demand. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful for every episode that I put out there. It only helped us. You know, for now, things have changed for us. Big paradigm shift. We're here at the Thatcher School. But no, we're not doing the television shows. We do put out some horse training tips, horsemanship tips on the internet. People can Google my name and see some stuff like that if they want to see what the old guy's up to. We're still sharing some of that stuff.
That's fantastic. I know I still every now and then, maybe I shouldn't admit this. This is going to seem kind of sappy, but every now and then I still look back and search for that video that you had, that little sizzle that you had made up for the Road to the Horse. That was, I think of all the horsemanship videos and the little promotional things that I've seen through the years, that was definitely one of my favorites.
Oh, well, you know, that was fun to do. I think we did that for the 2009 event, the year that I won it. And that was funny because I had a client who I was training cow horses for, but his job, he traveled around the world directing TV commercials, and he'd put together these little commercials for, you know, Burger King or Lens Crafters or whatever. And so I told him what I needed to do. He says, hey, I'll do this for you. He brought out this whole production.
No kidding.
Crew.
Wow.
And the serious cameras, we filmed all day, and he put these pieces together, and all the things that I did dumb, he left on the editing room floor, and made me look like a superhero.
All the times you fall off and have to dust off your shafts,
yeah,
and
really,
you know, yeah, I know how that goes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a really fun gift. You know, since that time, people that have watched my horsemanship show, and I'll just, a little shout out to my wife, who, you know, didn't know anything more than snapping a Polaroid picture at one time. She has done all the filming and editing for our TV shows for years. She just started working at it and going, taking lessons and getting help. And so what a huge blessing that was for us. We could be somewhere, you know, traveling down the road and we're one extra day at a clinic and was, hey, let's film a show right now. I don't have to call in the production crew and set that all up. My wife, she did it all.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Amazing.
I remember at some of the clinics, she was filming and making little like clinic recap videos and such. So that must have been before the shows were starting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was just a great, great thing that she's done. Now she's actually doing some filming for the Thatcher School here and some editing for them. So
that's great.
She's a smart one. I told people, I said, because they said, oh, does your wife ride? Say, well, she would probably tell you she's a little intimidated by the horses.
Right.
There's a few things that I do that she doesn't want to do, and there's a whole list of things that she can do that I don't know how to do. And so that's why for the last 32 years, we've made a pretty good team.
I love it. Well, and that's what it's all about. It's that partnership. And I always thought, you know, that was great the way that you two worked together. And I remember her sharing with me that she's a rather timid rider and she'd sooner stay on foot than horseback.
That's right.
the fact that the two of you were able and she was able to support the business and help you with the clinics and things like that, in spite of not riding. I've always looked up to that, you know. I've always felt that's something to aspire to.
Running the business, keeping our finances straight, keeping us out of jail.
You're right.
You know, handling the schedule and with technology, staying up on all that is, you know, websites became big and YouTube and all that business. You just stayed cutting edge for all those years.
That's fantastic. I love it. I love it. So, so we're going to shoot over here if you don't mind. And I don't want to cut you short for time or anything like that. So, if we're running into any kind of time clock,
everything I know.
There we go. Well, I'm going to pick your brain about one other thing. It's something that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about yet, over podcasts or anything like that. And, I'd like to get a little bit more involved with this idea of the bridle horse process. If I could have you share a little bit of that with us, my business partner, boss mare, manager, girlfriend, Dee Dee, she's got a quarter horse mare right now, bred from the 4/6s, that she's working through the bridle horse process. She's a dressage rider from way back. So, and with me being on the road full time, I kind of give her little tasks to work on and things like that. And she's done a pretty good job of bringing this little horse along. She's got her pack in the half breed right now, and she's doing pretty well with that. But can you share with our listeners out here some of your insight, some of your ideas on this whole bridle horse process?
Well, you bet. And of course, this will not be exhaustive at all, but it's just kind of my spin on it. And, you know, this all started out here on the West Coast, and that's where I've always lived. So I was just always around it. If you're from Ohio or Pennsylvania, and then that style of horsemanship maybe wasn't out there, but it doesn't mean there wasn't good horsemanship out there. We're talking about a certain style of horsemanship, but there's other good styles. So I want to say that at the onset. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from the Spaniards to the Mexicans to the Californios, this idea of the bridle horse, and in the National Rein Cow Horse Association that where we show horses, the slogan says where tradition is not forgotten. And this is really the only association that highlights this idea of developing horses over a long period of time. We start them in the snaffle, and then we ride them in the hackamore. And for some of your listeners, just to educate them, we're talking about a Bozell-type hackamore. It's made out of rawhide or latigo, not a mechanical hackamore, but just an oval-shaped loop that goes around their nose, the hackamore, and then to the two-rein, and then to the bridle. And so it's a progression and each of these progressions take over a year to do. And so we're talking that even legally in the rein cow horse deal, you wouldn't even show a horse until they were like 6. And we show them as 3 in the snaffle, 4 and 5 in the hackamore, and then you can, if you want to do the 2-rein, you do that for a year, and so wow, 7 before they're really a bridle horse. So it's not something that happens quickly, and that's what the old Mexicans used to say: mañana, mañana. There's always tomorrow. We don't have to train our horse today to know everything. But this idea of putting the horse in the bridle, we're referring to a leverage bit, some type of curb bit. You mentioned your girlfriend is using a half breed right now. You go all the way to a spade bit. They traditionally have some type of port in a solid mouthpiece. The port is the raised part in the middle, and they will have a roller or cricket in that helps the horse stay salivated and keeps his tongue working a little bit and keeps his jaw loosened up. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, too, you will ride these horses with reins and Romel rather than split reins. And again, you can go watch some great reining horse competitions, and that's a little different. It's a little different style of horsemanship where they are riding them in curb bits, but they're riding with split reins, and the reins come down the left-hand side of the horse, and as compared to the Romel, it comes down the right-hand side. But it's not that one is right and one is wrong. It's just, what are your goals, and what fancies you? What do you think you would like to pursue? this horsemanship deal is an art. If it was a science, we're not going to argue about it. If it's a science, then hey, it's got to be this way. But if it's an art, I can hang stuff on my wall, and it is art, but you might not want to hang it on your wall.
Right.
And I really love the California style of horsemanship and making the bridle horses, but somebody else might want to do something else. Your girlfriend had a dressage background. There are things that I could learn there as well. But this whole bridle horse concept came off the big ranchos when there are large, vast holdings of land and cattle out here on the West Coast. And these guys just had time. They were horseback all the time, and they developed these horses over a long period of time. And the great thing about the bridle horses, the rein cow horses, that I really appreciate, and my biases are going to come out now, but they're just so broke, Patrick.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch a speed event horse, I mean, a world-class horse, a barrel horse or a team roping horse or whatever. And you've seen those horses, maybe they would get done with a run and they're kind of jiggy coming back to the back end. Their emotions have come up. I watch these cow horses, and where you have to go out and do the sliding stops and the spins and the flying lead changes. Then you have to ask for a cow and you box the cow. And then you take the cow down the fence. I mean, you're going so fast to catch that cow. Then you got to take that cow off the fence and circle them both ways. And you are kicking your horse in the belly and you are clucking and trying to get up there. And you're asking for every ounce of energy and adrenaline he has. And then the whistle blows because you're done and you pull up. And I've done it 1,000 times and I've watched thousands of runs. And I can't count on one hand the horses that did anything other than walk out with their heads down on loose rein.
Relaxed and quiet.
Because they're so broke. They learn to handle that intensity and that pressure and that speed and still keep their emotions together and then come back down. And to me, that is just so cool. You know, don't show me what you can do with your horse when everything is just right in a sterile environment and the stars are all aligned and all that. You show me how your horse is when the chips are down and the prairie fire is coming his way and you're throwing some speed at it and some intensity at it. And does your horse stay in the bridle? You know, we use that term in training, talk about when we're trying to guide him at all rates of speed. Does he throw his head up in the air and hollow out, or does he stay right there with you regardless of what you're asking for? And these things, as I mentioned earlier, I've seen it since I was a little kid and said, I can't settle for anything less.
Right.
So it's my style of horsemanship. I'm just one, you know, overage kid trying to figure it out. there's a whole world of guys and gals out there that are better than me. And that's why I go ride with them, because it's amazing what they get these bridle horses to do. And I want to get a piece of that.
Right. Well, and boy, wouldn't it be nice if whatever horse it was you got on, whether it was a dressage horse or a bridle horse or a roping horse or a reining horse or a polo pony, wouldn't it be nice if they could all turn that dial up and turn that dial down whenever we asked?
Yeah, and you know, here's the deal, Patrick. What I have found over the years is rope horse trainers or a guy looking for polo ponies, they will snatch up those cow horses all day long. If they can find one for sale, it's easy to teach them the little job to do,
right?
You know, to handle the rope and the jerk or swinging the mallet or whatever. But they've got something now that is maneuverable.
Exactly. They've got something they can handle. Right. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. At any rate of speed, they can put any part of their body in any given position at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, man, I'll take 10 more just like them if you got it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That kind of gets into what I know you've referred to as that four-part harmony. Right, being able to break that body apart.
Yeah, that's right. That's just been the centerpiece of my performance deal. And I, you know, I gave it some labels and my own twist to it. But this is nothing much different than what any great horseman or horsewoman does. Getting that body control. And one horseman said, "Body control is not the main thing. Body control is everything."
Everything, right?
You know, people that, "Well, I just want to do flying lead changes. I just want to spin them." You know, but they don't want to get control of those body parts. So I've got to have some way to get control of that head, neck, and then those shoulders, then that rib cage, that hind end. And when I can separate all those body parts out and have them malleable and pliable and move them where I want to move them, it's like, okay, now I've come to class prepared. And that's why I think guys let me come and hang out in their arena and ride with them, guys that are better than me, because I come prepared. No, I can't do everything they can do always, and their horses sometimes are better than my horses, but I bring something that when they say, hey, get that horse's hip over, I can get his hip over.
Exactly.
You know? But if you don't, you know, it's like having a teacher that says, hey, next week we're going to have a class discussion about this book, chapters 3 through 12. And the teacher's all excited about it, and all the kids show up. And then it's, okay, well, let's talk. What did the character do in chapter 3? Oh, we didn't read the book.
Right.
We can't even have the discussion now. We can't do anything. We got to go back and do remedial work. And, you know, so much of what you and I have done for a living over the years is pulling people up out of the negative numbers, just getting them up on the playing field where we can now start to do something.
Yes. Yes. Well, I find so much of the time, and I don't want to sound negative when I say this, but I think it's kind of what the whole, what a lot of the clinic route is all about. We find folks that have an idea of what they want to do with their horses as an end goal, but they're missing the pieces in between, right? They know what the X, Y, Z is that they want to do, but they miss all the letters ahead of that, or a large portion of the letters ahead of that. And so then, like you said, then they can't get their flying changes. They can't get that horse to rate back and dial down when they need him to, or they can't move that hip over in that situation when they need him to, when the prairie fire is on them and the chips are down.
Yeah, sure. You know, I've got this little deal that I call four-part harmony and putting all those body parts together, and I've got it on the DVD, and I teach it all over the country. But in all reality, I don't like any of it. I don't want to do that. I just want to slide them. I just want to spin them.
Right.
I just want to do flying lead changes, go work out. That's all I want to do.
Yep.
But I want to do those things so bad that I finally come to a point in my life, and people finally shook me enough, said, hey, Richard, you ain't going to get to do this until you get control over those body parts. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And so I do it. It's like, okay, now I'm starting to achieve some of my goals.
Right.
You know, this man that I worked for when I was a kid, Troy Henry, I remember the night it happened. A couple guys pulled up in an old Chevy something or other, and they had a horse to train. They were talking to my boss about training this horse. And I think they were wanting a deal or wanting a discount or something, but they made this statement to him, and you'll think this is funny. They said, just train him to spin and slide stop, and we'll do the rest. We'll do all the other stuff. The rest? What do you mean the rest? What are you going to teach them to do? Paw at the trailer?
Right, I mean, right.
There's nothing left, man. You get those horses turning around correctly, stopping correctly. You've got all that stuff done. There's
That's
no
too funny. You just give him his master's degree, and we'll teach him the ABCs.
Yeah, right. Isn't that crazy? That's exactly what they said. Yeah. I'll never forget that. That happened in 1979.
Yo, so things haven't changed a whole lot.
Well, I don't know. We're just chipping away at it, trying to educate the people that come across our paths. And
yes.
But, you know, we are living in the information age now, and with the clinic deal getting so popular and our horsemanship's on TV shows and people can get a DVD, you know, there's just no excuse.
Right.
Being ignorant now.
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, and this is maybe even a little bit before your time, it was kind of a big secret. And the great horsemen, I mean, they weren't telling you anything, and you just had to kind of look around the corner and watch and try to figure out what they were doing. But now, the best guys in the world sit down and film a whole DVD and said, here's every one of my secrets.
Yes.
Here's everything that I do to horses. So the information is out there. But they know they're not giving anything away that, you know, is somehow to rob them of any future success, because it takes a lifetime to learn, even if somebody gives you the DVD.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And it's like you said, you know, we're in the information age. And I like to tell folks all the time that we're not even in the information age anymore. We're now in the free information age.
I know.
Which can also be kind of dangerous, because sometimes that free information is worth what you pay for it. But what I do find just fantastic is now more than ever, I've got riders that will come to a clinic with a list of, I know this is not good enough yet with my horse, because I've seen guys like Richard Winters and listened to him talk about that four-part harmony. And now I know the pieces that are sticky, but I just don't quite understand how to get them unsticky, you know? And I think that's so valuable, because like you said, now they're showing up to class, like those students you talked about. Now they're ready to discuss chapter 3.
Yeah, you bet. And I think that's what kind of kept our business going, because there were a lot of clinics you'd go to, you know, learn how to disengage the hindquarters and get them to lead right and stuff. But if I wasn't offering something different, then it was going to be hard for me to carve out a niche. But when we started helping people bridge the gap and say, hey, you can have more refinement, you can have more, you know, performance and collection athleticism, and this is how I'm getting here, and why don't you come along with me? And so towards the end there, the last few years, this is how we labeled them. I did very few straight up what I call horsemanship clinics, but I would do these advancing horsemanship clinics.
Yeah.
And the prerequisite for that, as well as we could monitor it, said you can come to this advancing clinic, but you need to be able to walk, trot, and lope out in an arena with a large group of horses and feel like you're under control. You need to be able to get them stopped and backed up, and they need to be able to move off your leg. Always and every time. If you're kind of there, then you're ready to advance with me.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, at our regular horsemanship clinics, and I've done this for years, here it is Sunday afternoon, and we're wrapping up, and the culmination of the whole event, and where some of these people are so excited because they actually loped their horses,
right.
Because they just painted themselves in these corners and got themselves in little tiny boxes from maybe past accidents or lack of confidence or whatever, that's what the clinic would amount to. You know,
right.
After 2 or 3 days, we got them where they could lope their horse without, you know, falling off or getting bucked off or whatever. So to do the advancing clinics where people's like, yeah, hey, you want me to lope 15 circles right now and there's 20 other people in this arena? I can do it.
Yes.
Well, if you're there and he moves off your leg, and let's go on. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you were one of the first, and just because it was on my radar at that point, but I remember thinking you were one of the first clinicians that I recalled having that distinguishment there between the beginning horsemanship, the advancing horsemanship, and actually saying, look, you've got to have this taken care of before you can come and do this.
Yeah, and you know what a lot of it was, Patrick? My clinics just became an evolution of where I was in my horsemanship. I was excited to teach the things that I was learning and the
right.
things that were making a difference for me. It's like, that's what I want to go talk about all weekend long.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to just, you know, load a bunch of horses in a trailer.
Right.
I mean,
well, and isn't
that
helpful for us also in our own learning, you know, being able to teach it and then experience it for ourselves as teachers, experiencing those things with multitudes of other horses that will bring other things to the table that we get the chance to experiment with and explore. You know, I tell everybody, I probably learn more at every one of my clinics than anyone else there because I've got these
true.
Ideas that I get to experiment with all these other horses and all these other riders as we go.
Sure. Yeah, I tell them the same thing. I said, here's a great example of why life isn't fair. You come to this clinic, you're paying quite a bit of money to be here. I'm coming to this clinic. I'm getting paid to be here, but I'm the one's going to learn the most.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But it's so true.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That is fantastic. Well, we have a question that popped in from one of our listeners that I think is fantastic as far as right now where we are in the conversation. Kaylin wants to know, what has been your biggest challenge in teaching people?
My goodness, my biggest challenge. You know what I've told people many times over the years as an encouragement to them, but there's some truth in it. You're a better rider than you think you are. My challenge, especially in the straight-up horsemanship clinics, people are coming there, and they've got their horse, they got their trailer, they got their saddle, and they got this don't list, this can't, won't, don't, yeah, but list. And their envelope of comfortableness has gotten small. And my challenge with those riders during that time is, can I expand that envelope? No, I can't do that. I'm going to sit this one out. You know, but gradually taking them along to where when they leave my clinic, their envelope is there, that much larger now, and they feel a little bit more comfortable. And every time I can do that, I feel like, you know what? I don't feel bad about taking this person's money, and they don't feel bad about being here. It was successful. And then hopefully next time I ride with them, we can open up that envelope a little bit more.
Right.
And, you know, beyond that is presenting things to people in a way that they can receive. You and I, we can say we're in the horse business all day long, Patrick, but in all reality, we're in the people business. Horses don't write checks. People are the ones that write checks. And I can be a great horseman, and I can have the best ideas, but if I can't serve that to that client in a way that they can receive, where they're not going to feel defensive or scared, and you know what I'm always remind myself of is that, you know, even though they don't seem to be getting this and they're struggling and they almost seem a little inept, it doesn't mean that they're stupid people, that I'm smart and they're stupid. Because if Monday morning, if I have to go to their job site
exactly
and do what they do in that hospital or that computer lab or that fire station or whatever it is, I mean, I wouldn't have a clue. They'd say, Richard, I really thought you were brighter than this. Yeah, so I'm always reminding myself of that these people are not stupid. They're just ignorant about these things, and hats off to them that they're brave enough to come out and try these new things.
Absolutely. Well, and it's all about that experience, you know?
Yeah, you bet. So that's the biggest challenge. The easy part, and you've got to agree with me, the easy thing to do is just get on their horse and fix it.
Yes.
You know, and you look like a hero because their deal looked like a train wreck. But the challenging part is sitting there and coaching them through it.
Yes.
You know, that's why I thought, wow, you know, for the people that knew Tom Dorrance in his latter years, back when I knew him, when I was around him, I never saw him on a horse. He was already past that point in his life. And so he sat there on a little stool and taught for years. And so he never had the privilege of or never had the opportunity to get on and fix something. He had to talk them through it every single time. And that's a tremendous gift. And it is a big challenge.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Did you get to spend much time with Tom?
You know, I felt it a privilege to, yes, ride with Tom and to ride with Ray. Now, I was not a protege of either of those individuals, but they were West Coast guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever there was an opportunity, if they were somewhere close, and even Bill Dorrance had the opportunity. In fact, I think I was at the first Bill Dorrance clinic that Bill Dorrance ever taught, and he was in his early 90s.
Really? How funny is that?
But he's not quite as well known as his brother Tom.
Right.
But you know what's interesting now, and I like to do it at my clinics, the subject will come up of these great gurus and patriarchs of horsemanship. And I'll say, how many of you ever rode with or was at a clinic physically with Tom or Ray? And, you know, every time I ask that, there's fewer and fewer hands go up.
Yeah.
In a few short years, people are not – some people are going to say, well, were they really even people? Was this a legend? Was this like, you know, Davy Crockett or, you know, Johnny Appleseed? Was he really a real person? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they were real guys and talented horsemen.
Yeah.
So, yes, I feel very fortunate to have spent some quality time with those guys, as you did with Ray. I remember some great stories you told me.
Oh, yes.
And we don't have to go into it now, but I love telling the story about put a halter on him. But you and that colt down at the Ray Hunt Clinic after you thought you cut his tongue off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
We better not talk about that anymore. That was the funniest thing I ever heard.
That was serious. Story. Yeah. That was proof that when there was a job to do, there's a job to do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure. Gosh, I nearly forgot about that one. Goodness.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. You know, let me tell you too, Patrick. I think the last time we were together, one of the last times I saw you do a little colt starting demonstration at a venue, and I was just watching. I was going to be on later or something, and man, you just did a great job. And I've just seen you evolve in your horsemanship and just continue to get better. You're just eager to get to that next vista in your journey. And it's showing. So keep it up, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And I tell you, that growth is so much of what it's about with us, with all of us, the riders and us. You know, we might think we've been in this for a while, but boy, we're still getting at it. You know, I tell my students all the time, you know, the big difference that I've started to realize between a professional and an amateur is that a professional takes more lessons than an amateur ever has.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, you bet. You know, who's the best golfer in the world? I used to use the analogy of Tiger Woods. I don't know if he is anymore. But he pays a guy hundreds of thousands of dollars. That guy could no more beat him in a round of golf. But right. when he goes, he's got to have that coach. Yep. He's got to have that second set of eyes that's going to watch him and say, hey, keep your arm straight there, Tiger. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Hey, right. Your right front foot came up off the ground, whatever it might be. And so, yeah, to think I can figure this out all on my own, just me and my horses, maybe somebody can, but it's not me.
Right, right. Isn't that the truth? Yeah, you know, and we say it all the time of the top riders, you know, the riders in the Olympics and things like that. There's very few times when they're riding that they're not being coached.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so it's when you want to get to a real high level, boy, you're not ditching your coaches. You're not getting out of that. That's something that you're going to be committed to, someone helping you forever.
I think that's right. You know, my son-in-law, one of the best ranked cow horse trainers in the business today, after him and my daughter got married, they've been looking at places and wanted to buy a place. They've now settled down and bought a place out of Weatherford, Texas. But his family was from Nebraska. And I said, well, hey, do you ever think about going back to Nebraska? Land was a little cheaper up there, and you can set up a place up there. And they'd been down in Texas, and that's really turned into the hotbed of horseman or performance horsemanship in these last 10, 20 years. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, I couldn't do it. I'm afraid if I moved up there, I'd get off track. I've got to be right here. He said, I got to have guys come into my place and ride with me, even if I'm giving lessons. I've got to be focused and centered around the best horsemanship that I can possibly get. And he's one of the best guys in the world. He said, I can't just move to who cares Arkansas or, you know, nowhere in Nebraska and think I'm going to maintain this edge that I have right now. I thought that was very telling.
Right. Absolutely. It's too easy to get stale.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
sure. And that's in everything in life, you know, every skill, every job, it's easy to get stale. Horses are no different. You know, I think horses might show it to us a little faster.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not really
right.
Different.
Somebody said consistency is a tool of learning, but variety is a spice of life. You got to mix it up.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You're out there loping circles all day long in the arena. Maybe it's time to go out on a trail ride.
Right.
You know, you're just out there trail ride every day. Well, maybe you need to come in here and work on some of this body control.
Yep. So, yep. Push the limits and see where you have it, see where you're lacking, for sure.
There you go.
So we'll kind of start wrapping up here a little bit, because again, I don't want to take you too long here. And I think you and I could probably talk for hours on the phone here. With all the catching up that we can do. Pia has asked a question. She sent one in that I think is great. It's one that pops up, I think, a lot of times. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your insight on this. But Pia wants to know, what advice can you give to an older, timid beginner rider?
You know, I think that's pretty easy. And really, I don't have to narrow it down to them being older or being inexperienced. I think anybody and almost everybody can be successful with horses, but I think you see it every weekend just like I have. The problem is not the person necessarily or even the horse, but it's the person and that horse. It's a mismatch. Mm-hmm. It's like, Sally, you could be successful with horses, but why are we riding this horse? How did you end up with this horse? Right. You know, this, if you were my older sister and you're wanting some free advice, I'd say, hey sis, let's get rid of this sucker. Let's find you something you can enjoy. It's supposed to be fun.
Right.
And so for this lady that has submitted this question, if she needs to seek a professional to help her find that horse, that she finds a horse suitable to her skill set. If she feels like she's timid, if she feels like she's inexperienced, she needs to find an old, trusted campaigner that's taught a lot of kids to ride, that hasn't developed a bad attitude and taken advantage. There are, I'm not saying they're cheap, and I'm not saying they're on every street corner, but it's better than throwing good money after bad. Because how many people bought their first horse only to realize this was the wrong horse?
Exactly.
They either got out of horses or maybe they tried to buy another one.
Right.
But spend that money up front. Get that right horse up front. And then if you want to just ratchet it back, even before you make that commitment, find somebody really reputable. And this is harder and harder to find. Someone that has school horses that you could go and take some lessons before you make that big obligation of buying your own. But being properly matched is huge. Then almost everybody can be successful. But so many people are not. It's not because they're stupid, not because they're dumb, not because they have a handicap, but man, they got a horse. He'd be tough for me to ride.
Yep.
It wouldn't be fun
it's
for
just
me
not,
to ride. Here
not a suitable
to
situation. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's right.
So true. And, you know, I find you mentioned about taking lessons off of somebody else's horse. I find myself more and more these days, particularly with our beginners or green riders or the timid riders, I give the advice more and more, don't buy a horse. Lease a horse. Take those lessons. You know, spend hours and hours in the saddle on somebody else's horse, on a horse where you can, you know, you can take your lesson and then you can kind of hang up that worry and go focus on your other things and then come back and take that lesson and then go focus on your other things rather than having kind of that daunting shadow looming over you that you're worried and now potentially you feel like you're stuck.
Yeah. I think if I'm going to go buy a condo in Hawaii, well, I've never been to Hawaii. I think I'll go visit Hawaii.
Exactly.
I'll go there and stay in a hotel a couple times and look around a little bit.
Right, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Well, and that's a perfect segue into our wrap-up questions. I've got a couple wrap-up questions here that we kind of ask everybody because I love hearing the variety of answers that come up from this. And like I said, Pia's question was a great segue. So, Richard, if there was one specific thing that you could recommend for riders to focus on as a primary means of improving their horsemanship, what would that be?
You got to ride them. And I'll clarify that. People have horses. They get them out. They saddle them. But do they really ride them? Well, yeah, I was on them for like an hour and a half. You know, when's the last time you loped 10 circles each way?
Yep.
I'll go to a clinic and I'll get on somebody's horse's little sticky and I'll lope around for 5 minutes and I'll say, you know what I think? And you tell me if I'm wrong. I think this horse has loped more in the last 5 minutes than you've loped him in the last 6 months. You've got to use him. Well, if he'd lope like your horse, I would lope him. Well, he's not going to lope like my horse.
Until you lope him. Yep.
Well, he kind of wants to buck when I ask him to lope. Well, that's because he hasn't been loping. They got to go through the full range of motion. But people, you know, maybe because of a bad experience, maybe because they're timid or lack confidence, whatever it is, they're just riding on safety all the time. And I'm not wanting anybody to go out there and be dangerous or haphazard.
Right.
But in all reality, here's the funny thing. They're not loping their horse because they're scared. I'm too scared not to lope their horse.
Exactly.
I would not ride that capped volcano day after day. I think he's all right. I think he's all right. Don't want to go any faster. There's stuff going on underneath. You might not see it. You might not feel it, but it's there, and it will pop out at an inopportune time. And so getting those horses really warmed up and just having that be their paradigm. My horses would, if they could speak English, and if I got on and rode them for 45 minutes and put them up and had not loped them extensively, they'd say, Richard, are you all right?
Right.
Is everything okay today? Are you not feeling well?
Right.
I mean, because that's just what they do every day. And so it's just who they are. So if you have a horse, you need to, how am I going to get this horse where I move him out and quit making excuses? Well, I just trail ride him. Well, I mean, that's fine. Nothing matter that, but you got to find some way, some venue, some opportunity to get these horses moving. That's what they were bred and made to do. They were made to move through the full range of motion, walk, trot, lope, stop, turn, go the other way. So that would really be my advice. And you know, in my clinics every weekend, that's what I've been helping people do. Let's get them going.
Yep, absolutely. Get them going. I love that. And I love where you mentioned about the not just going out and being haphazard about it. And it brings to mind a quote that I steal from you all the time. I shouldn't say I steal it from you because I credit you with it every time I repeat it. Talking about haphazard riders, I remember years ago you made a comment, I know old pilots and I know bold pilots, but I don't know any old bold pilots.
Oh, yeah. You betcha. Because I used to fly airplanes and I heard that when I was in training to fly planes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. We got to be smart about it.
And
you don't want to just be haphazard and just yahoo around. But we systematically get our horses prepared and to follow that analogy, that pre-flight checklist, making sure our horse is airworthy before we taxi down the runway and try to take off. And if you're not quite sure how to get that done, you need to find somebody like Patrick King or somebody else that can help you work through that process so that you're not the proverbial guy that comes back and says, you know, I was riding along and everything was all right. And then all of a sudden, here's the quote, for no reason, they didn't. Well, there was always a reason.
Exactly.
For a reason that I was oblivious to, that would be more accurate.
Right. I tell riders all the time, the four biggest lies that I know are all of a sudden, out of nowhere, for no reason, and without warning. You know?
Yeah, well, that's great. That's yeah. great. Yeah, okay, next time I say that, I'll give you credit.
There we go. There we go. Oh, that's fantastic. So next wrap-up question, and this was a question that Eddie had also earlier in the conversation, so I hope he didn't think I was ignoring him. I was saving it for now. If you could ride with anyone, past or present, who would it be and why?
I would probably ride with Sarah Dawson. Little girl that I raised that went on and married Chris Dawson. In fact, I packed up my wife, lived in my trailer for 3 months this winter just to go ride with those kids.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I just went out there every day and learned and listened and didn't act like a big shot, didn't try to show them my clinic credentials, and I learned so much this winter. So, I'd go ride with Sarah Dawson if I had my choice.
I love it. I love it. What is your current personal definition of horsemanship?
Oh my goodness. Great question, Packer King. I define horsemanship by clarifying what it is not. Horseback riding, as I mentioned earlier, is just the art of not falling off. Anybody can be a horseback rider. They have therapeutic riding programs for handicapped people. Anybody can ride a horse, and it's a big club. But the horsemanship club, that's an elite club. Mm-hmm. That's a club where the dues are a lot higher, and you have to keep your dues paid up month after month, year after year, and you never get to be the president of the horsemanship club. You can just hope to be part of the club, a rookie in training. And so not everybody is that interested in it. Some people say, I just want to get on one, kick them to go and pull them to stop. Okay, be a horseback rider.
Right.
And horsemanship, that's something special. That's recognizing that, hey, we're not just driving around golf carts here. You know, we've got a live animal that God has made to do amazing things for us. But we have a huge responsibility to communicate things to them in a way that they can understand. So I am striving to be, and ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a horseman. I wanted to be one of those guys that when you saw me ride, if you knew anything at all, you could tell there was something different. I don't know if I'm there yet, but I'm headed towards that point of true horsemanship.
I love it. That's great. That is, I think that's one of the best definitions I've heard. So, Richard, you still have your DVDs, you still have your website out there. How can folks find you?
Well, that's right. We're still keeping the website alive, wintersranch.com. And when you Google that, we come right up, and that'll take you to some YouTube videos. And I got a whole garage full of DVDs. Somebody wants to buy one, I'll probably make you a deal.
You've got some books now also, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking. You know, Western Horseman, really the trade magazine out there that, you and I have had articles in a lot of magazines over the years. But if Western Horseman will do something with you, to me, that was always a pretty big deal. So they published a book for me about 2 years ago, From Rider to Horseman, interestingly enough. And that's available out there. So that's pretty cool, too. We were very honored that they were willing to do that. Maybe they went in alphabetical order, huh? They finally got to the W's. I don't know how they did it.
I'm pretty sure that's probably not how that worked.
Oh,
that's great.
Wintersranch.com. People can correspond with us, can look and see what we have going on. So we haven't completely disappeared, but we've done a little paradigm shift for sure.
Yep, that's great. Well, this has been a lot of fun. So, Richard, at the end of all of our broadcasts, we do a question of the day. Now, when it's just me, myself, I ask the question of the day. And this is a question that other folks have to answer. Our listeners have to answer. And they do it in the comment section of these videos or the audios when they listen to them later. When there's anyone on with me, they get to ask the question of the day. So I'm going to turn this to you. I've been asking you a bunch of questions. So now you get to ask a question of the audience. So what's our question of the day?
Okay. All right. And they're going to submit answers?
Yep.
And then you're going to tell them, hey, you're the one that got the right answer?
It's anything. It can be any question you want. About anything you want. It doesn't even have to be horse related, really, but I have a feeling, you know, the history that we have together is probably going to be a horse question, but, you know, if not, well, that's all right, too.
Okay, I don't know exactly what you're looking for, but here you go. I've talked so much about my daughter and how proud we are of her. And of course, she followed in her daddy's footsteps. She's a professional horse trainer today. Her brother, Joseph, is 15 months older, married a beautiful Texas girl a few years ago. If Sarah has a cool job, Joseph has a really cool job. And I wonder who knows enough about the winners to know what my son Joseph does for a living.
I love that. All right, gang, if you're out there listening and you don't know, that's a great way, by the way, Richard, to drive folks to your website. That was pretty smart, I think.
they will be impressed.
There you go.
Impressed every time I think about it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yes, that was a pretty good little marketing way to drive folks to your website there. I love it. That's awesome. Okay. So, folks, for those of you out there listening, Richard's question of the day, what job is it that Richard's son Joseph has? Give us your answers in the comments section of this video. Richard Winters, thank you so much for agreeing to come on here with this episode for me. It's been so much fun catching up with you.
Hey, you bet, Patrick. And again, so pleased to see how your business has developed and unfolded. Glad that you're out there doing what you're doing. And let me know if you got any camels to train in the future, you know who to call.
There we go. You bet. You bet. And I'm looking forward to taking you up on that offer of stopping by and visiting with you at the Thatcher School sometime. Hopefully I'll be out in California sometime here in the next couple years.
So. Hey, we'll leave the gate open for you, buddy.
Perfect. Perfect. Fantastic. You hang on for me just 1 minute, Richard. We're going to wrap up here and then I'll be back with you. So, gang, I want to thank you so much for tuning in for episode number 16 of Talking About Horses. I really, really appreciate you giving Richard and I your ear for this time. Please remember that if you've missed any of this, you can access the full broadcast through Facebook, YouTube, or by streaming from iTunes. And through whatever outlet you're listening, please be sure to give us a rating, a comment, a review, and a share. Your word of mouth is the fuel for this fire. Tune in next week, gang, for Talking About Horses, when I'll be joined by leading biomechanics specialist and veterinarian, Dr. Gerd Hauschman. Thanks for tuning in, guys.